Okay, in the next few minutes, I'll be talking about Miles Wolf and the rebirth of independent baseball. But first, let me touch on who is Miles Wolf. I'm not sure if many of you know Miles Wolf is, so let me give you a little background on him. Miles was born in Baltimore and moved to Greensboro at an early age. When he was in grade school in Greensboro, he was given some free tickets to see the Greensboro team in the minor leagues. He fell in love with minor league baseball and really said, I want a career in minor league baseball. But after graduating from high school, he goes to Johns Hopkins, gets a bachelor's in history. And while at Hopkins, he's a continued visitor to the Orioles headquarters on 33rd Street, looking for a position with the Orioles, but to no avail. So after Hopkins, he goes to UVA, gets a master's degree in history, writes a thesis about the sit-ins at Woolworths in Greensboro, and then goes into the Navy, still with his desire to get into minor league baseball. And he's fortunate enough, after the Navy, to get a position as the general manager of the Savannah minor league team, which is in the Atlanta Braves organization. And he does that for 3 years. Besides, I want to do something more. So he bounces around to a variety of other minor leagues with a variety of positions. Something's gnawing at Miles. Here he is, a Hopkins graduate, prestigious university, and he's bouncing around the minor leagues. He decides, I really want to own my own minor league team, which was his dream back in grade school, back in Greensboro. Now, an opportunity exists in Durham. The Braves want to expand their minor league offerings. So Miles is aware of that and decides to purchase the Durham franchise, the rights to the Durham franchise, for $2,417. Now, they have a ballpark in Durham. It's the old Durham Athletic Park, an iconic ballpark, hasn't been used for about a decade. It needs refurbishing. Miles convinces the city of Durham to pay for the refurbishing of the ballpark. Now, Miles really has no money, so he goes to family, friends, and a few investors and raises some operating funds. One of those investors happens to be Thomas Mount. Thomas is a Durham native who also is a movie producer out in Hollywood. Durham begins play in 1981. Huge success opening day. Over 4,000 fans show up. And the early part of the 1980s, it becomes a very viable minor league franchise. Now, back in Hollywood, Ron Shelton sends a script to Thomas Mount. It's about a baseball movie, about a minor league baseball movie, and that's the fruit, that's the beginning of Bull Durham. Thomas decides that Durham would be an excellent location for that. He sends Shelton to see Miles, they agree to make the movie, and the rest is history. It becomes not only a financial success, but an artistic, it's one of the best baseball movies, I think you'll all agree, that's ever been made. While owning Durham, and having the movie made, Miles decides to expand his minor league offerings, or minor league investments. And he sees a city about 25 miles west of Durham, Burlington. They have a ballpark. He says this would be a perfect location for an Appalachian League team. So he invests and owns the Burlington Indians franchise. He also acquires an interest in Asheville, Butte, Montana, and Utica, and in each one of those franchises, they're struggling. He straightens them out and then sells off his investment. He usually has some people going to these franchises to really straighten them out. Now, as the 1980s coming to a close, Miles realizes that this old Durham Athletic Park is not going to serve Durham very well in the future. He needs a new ballpark, and he has plans for a new ballpark. And he presents these plans to the city of Durham and also the county of Durham. And they can okay it, but they decide, they're politicians. And you know what politicians do. They cover their you know what. And as a result of covering their out, they decide to have a referendum and it gets turned down. Miles is devastated. He realizes he doesn't have the political clout to kind of negotiate with these politicians. So he decides maybe it's time for me to sell Durham. And he sells them to Jim Goodman from Capital Broadcasting, and now is now not no longer an owner of the Durham Bulls. But that sets off some thinking. Miles doesn't like the idea of not having total control of his minor league franchise. You know, these are affiliates of the major league, and they're subject to the whim of the major league franchise. And in 1990, Miles is still the owner of the Burlington franchise, and he's chosen to represent single-A ball in the 1990 contract negotiations between the minor leagues and the major leagues. Now, the major leagues put forth the proposal, and Miles, and by the way, also Mike Vec this morning, is involved in this. They decide this is not really a good proposal for the minor leagues. We're going to vote no. But before the vote, a friend comes to Miles, a friend who was on the major league negotiating team, and that friend says, Miles, if you don't vote yes on that proposal, the major leagues are prepared to take even further drastic action with respect to the minor leagues. So Miles decides to vote to support, and it gets passed by one vote. But he's not a happy camper. Now the other thing that, during this period, Miles now owns a hockey franchise. It's in a minor league hockey league. It's the Rolling Ascaps. And what he has is total control over the Rolling Ascaps. It's an independent franchise, no connection with the NHL. And he likes the idea, this independent concept. So let's talk a little bit about what is independent baseball. I think most of you are aware of this. It's teams or leagues that have no affiliation with the major leagues. Before Ricky and the farm and his farm system, the minors were pretty independent. Since leagues and teams have become affiliated, there have been a few independent teams in several different minor leagues. Two of the better known teams are the Portland franchise and the Salt Lake Trappers. By 1990, there were many independent franchises and no independent leagues. Some of you probably saw the Netflix documentary on the Bad Bastards of Baseball, and this talks about the Portland. It's a great documentary, I really recommend it. And then, of course, the Salt Lake Trappers in 1987, I believe it's still a record for organized baseball, 29 consecutive wins. Now, Miles is convinced that we need an independent league. And the 1980s see a resurgence in the minor leagues, and some of these towns that were suffering are doing quite well, like Durham. And so there are mid-sized cities interested in having their own franchise. Now, along the way, Miles becomes the owner of Baseball America. And that's a whole story all in itself. But he's the publisher of Baseball America. And as the publisher of Baseball America, he gets calls from Duluth, Minnesota, Sioux Falls, South Dakota, and Thunder Bay, Ontario, asking how they can get minor league franchises. He visits those cities and he realizes there's potential there. This could form a league in the north central part of the United States and also southern Canada. So he then didn't really consider St. Paul as a possibility, but they have Midway Park, which you saw slides of that this morning in Mike's presentation. And that's an unused ballpark. And so maybe St. Paul, and they have certainly a population. So St. Paul joins, they're the fourth franchise. Sioux City, Iowa. Miles had initially considered it, but they didn't have a ballpark. But the mayor convinces Miles that if they indeed are able to join the Northern League, he will make sure that a ballpark is produced. And finally, the last city is Rochester, Minnesota. Now that all the cities are decided, Miles needs owners. And of course, there's Mike. I think you saw that same picture this morning. As one of the St. Paul owners, Mike Vec and Marvin Goldline, with Bill Murray and Fran, who spoke to us this morning, and he's also one of the owners. Sioux City, Bill Pereira, Duluth, Bruce Engel, Harry, Sioux Falls, Harry Savanis, Thunder Bay, Ricky May, Rochester, Charles Sanders. I want to touch on Charles Sanders. Charles Sanders was the individual back in 1990, who cautioned Miles about voting no on the Major League vote. He was representing the Atlanta Braves franchise in interest in those for the Major Leagues. But Miles gets him to take the operating role for the Rochester, Minnesota, which is the final franchise in this independent league. Now, this is the Northern League. Now, Miles realizes that this is a pretty risky proposition for these individuals. So the deal is that after 3 years, if the league is successful, they will then pay $50,000 to the league. Okay, but up to then, they don't necessarily have to invest in the league. I mean, obviously, they have to invest in their teams. Who's going to play in this league? Well, every year you have the Major League Draft, so there are minor league players who get squeezed out. They certainly are a market to play in this league. College players who aren't drafted, again, a market for this league. And Miles is somewhat surprised to find a variety of coaches, managers, and executives who no longer have positions in minor league baseball who are willing to possibly involve themselves with the independent Northern League. And Leon Bull Durham is he plays for the St. Paul Saints in 1993. You saw Strawberry, Pedro Guerrero is another one, and of course you saw Kevin Millar is also another player for the St. Paul Saints. Now, the idea of independent baseball starts to catch on. And while the Northern League begins play in 1993, a second independent league, the Frontier League, begins play in West Virginia, Kentucky, and Ohio. And they target those players that didn't get drafted, the college kids who didn't get drafted. And then in 1994, Texas, Louisiana, North Central, and the Great Central Leagues, the North Central League has several individuals who got bypassed by Miles and are ticked off, so they decide to form their own league. And then finally in 1995, 11 new leagues are operating. Now you notice that the North Central and Great Central Leagues don't even last after 1994. They fold after the 1994 season. And the 11 new leagues, there aren't 11 leagues that finished that season. So it's a very risky proposition. Now, the Northern League continues to grow. The one franchise that struggles is the Rochester franchise. And Sam Katz decides to purchase that for $200,000, which is the Rochester debt from the previous year. And he moves them to Winnipeg, and it becomes a very viable franchise. 1996 sees the Fargo and Madison franchises. Fargo it's turned out to be a very viable franchise. Madison didn't, although I think Madison does have a franchise today in some league. By 2000, only the St. Paul ownership is in place. But look at these valuations. Duluth sold for $500,000, Thunder Bay for $750,000, and Sioux Falls for $1 million. So these initial owners who got involved made out. Miles engages in some new ventures in independent baseball. He starts another league called the Northeast League in 1999. And then he decides, well, I'm going to take these two leagues, the Northern League and the Northeast League, and I'll kind of create a single entity. And then we'll have the Northern League Central and the Northern League East operate as a single entity. And they do that for 4 years. Now, while that is going on, he buys the Bangor, Maine franchise and moves it to Quebec City as part of the Northern League East. Now, this turns out to be a kind of a love affair, Miles in Quebec City, mainly because his wife, Michelle, who also is a Canadian citizen, grew up in Northern Maine, speaks French fluently, loved the idea of spending summers in Quebec City. With Quebec City, it reflects a little bit of a change. Miles is now responsible for the day-to-day operations of the Quebec City franchise. I think I mentioned that Previously, he had somebody else taking care of day-to-day operations in Burlington and Durham, but now he's responsible. Day-to-day operations, he's got to move to Quebec City, buys a house in Quebec City, and is there at the stadium almost every day. Now, he also, in 2000s, Baseball Weekly comes out with USA Today, and then you have the internet. He decides he wants to get out of Baseball America, so he sells Baseball America. Further moves, in 2002, the Northern League ends its relationship with the Northeast League. Miles resigns as commissioner of the Northern League. The Northeast League then dissolves, but the remaining members form a league which is still in existence, the Can-Am League. He becomes also commissioner of another league, the Central League, which is the former Texas-Louisiana League, which started back in 1994. And the Durham office is now running two leagues and the Burlington and Quebec City. He still has an office in Durham and some staff that's responsible for these. The Northern League eventually dissolves with several franchises joining the Central League teams that already have now formed a new league, a new independent league called the American Association. Now off to the, you also see the Ottawa Business Journal here. And it talks about Miles coming to Ottawa. And that's another story. Miles sells the Quebec City franchise after the 2010 season. The Can-Am League is struggling. They need a new franchise. There's only four or five teams in this Can-Am League. Miles is encouraged to pursue Ottawa. But you know what? He's not very optimistic because supposedly there's an Eastern League, affiliated league, a AA league, that's also interested in Ottawa, and Nolan Ryan has got an interest in owning that league, owning that team. But much to his amazement, apparently the Eastern League and that proposal didn't ask too much from the city of Ottawa. The city of Ottawa selects Miles and the Can-Am League for their new franchise, which begins play in 2015. Now, he needs an attendance of about 2,500 on average. Now, by the way, you can see the picture of a nice stadium they have in Ottawa. It seats 10,000 fans. But he only gets an average of attendance of less than 2,000. So after 3 years, he's really losing money. And he has this three-year rule. If a franchise isn't successful after 3 years, it probably won't. So he goes to the city. Ottawa still wants Miles to own the Ottawa franchise and decides to propose a reduction in the stadium lease to keep him there. So Miles agrees to do so, even though that reduction never really takes place. So he actually owns the Ottawa franchise in 2018-2019. But attendance continues to disappoint. Final moves. Miles steps down as commissioner of both the Can-Am and American Association following the 2018 season. After losing $2 million in Ottawa, Miles terminates his ownership following the 2019 season. Now, Miles has done well with minor league in a lot of his moves, but it's still very risky. You can see he ended up losing $2 million in Ottawa. Now, he decides to, okay, I'll go back to Durham, and I'll focus entirely on my Burlington franchise, now the Burlington Royals. But guess what's going on? Major League Baseball, there's some rumors that they're going to shrink the minor leagues. And this Appalachian League, where you find the Burlington Royals, they're a target for this reduction. Two of Miles' key employees in Burlington bolt, because they have also heard these rumors. So Miles is left with no employees in Burlington. So he gets a hold of Dan Mouchon. Dan Mouchon happened to be the key individual who was running all the operations for Miles. But in 2017, Dan became the president of the Appalachian League, and he no longer started running these operations. That's why Miles had to resign as commissioner of a couple of these leagues. But Miles decides to call Dan and says, Dan, I want out of Burlington. Can you find me an owner? And within a week, Dan comes back to Miles and says, guess what? Ryan Cure, who was formerly a general manager of your Burlington franchise. He's interested. He's also a former student of mine at Elon University. He and Knuckleball Enterprises buy the Burlington, and if you, those of you might be aware, they still exist in the rookie league, in one of the major league rookie leagues, and they have the wonderful name of the Burlington Sock Puppets, because Burlington had a history of hosiery manufacture. So Miles is now out of baseball, so he decides to write. And he's already written at Lunch at the 5 and 10. That was his master's thesis at the UVA. And it's a really interesting book about those sit-ins at Woolworth's in Greensboro. He's also, some of you might be aware, has produced several editions along with Lloyd Johnson of the Encyclopedia of Minor League Baseball. He now writes, and this is a new McFarlane book that just came out. It's on sale at the McFarlane stand. There's a bulldozer at home plate, and the reason why there's a bulldozer on plate is the franchise hasn't paid the city, so the city puts a bulldozer on home plate, and they only take it away when they pay their rent. There's a couple other vignettes that are just fascinating, which tie into what we saw this morning. Remember the pig, the St. Paul pig? Well, Miles is a commissioner. And it gets a call from the president of the Northern League. We've got a problem, Miles. The pig defecated on home plate. And people are upset. What should I do? Miles says, did they really use the word defecate? The other one, and you saw this morning in the video of St. Paul Saints, the two sumo wrestlers? Okay, between any entertainment at many minor league games, well, in the game in St. Paul, the two managers got kicked out early in the game. They come back between maybe the sixth or seventh inning as sumo wrestlers. And guess what? Umpires are really ticked off about this. So Miles gets a call. What should he do? Okay. So I really would recommend the book, especially if you're interested in the chapter on St. Paul in there. There's also another great book, The Wild on the Outside, or something like that. Stephen Fatsis wrote it about the early days of the St. Paul Saints. Okay, so what is Miles's legacy? Well, of course, Durham has become one of the premier minor league franchises, and he started that in 1980. And then we have today, as the season began, 8 independent leagues. You have the American Association of Pro Baseball, including a team here in Chicago. Why don't we have a visit to see the Chicago Dogs? Okay, they play up by O'Hare, nice little stadium. And there's also two other, within an hour of here, Gary, Indiana, and Kane County are also in that American Association. The Atlantic League. They include the York Revolution. I include them. I cite them because it's only 15 minutes from my house. And then the Empire League in New York State, the Frontier League with 16 teams, Mavericks League up in the Northwest, the Pecos League with 16, the Pioneer League with 10, and the United Shore League with 4. So today we have 8 leagues, 77 cities that have independent baseball, which tended to all start with Miles in the Northern League back in 1990. So I suggest that this is the legacy that Miles has left us with. There's a word of caution in the back of this book. Remember Miles in 1990 grew to distrust the major leagues? Well, you see, asterisk, these partner leagues, and according to the Major League website, these are leagues that promote baseball, but they also become experimental sites for some of the new rules. And we know that the Roto-Wump, large bases, pickoff rules, and the fast pitch clock, all were tried out, not just in the minor leagues, but also in these independent leagues. So he's cautions that he doesn't really see too much of advantage, and he's afraid that they might relinquish a little bit more control over these independent leagues. And just this past year, St. Paul became an affiliated with the Minnesota Twins. Somerset joined the Yankees farm system in New Jersey, and Sugar Land, I believe, now is part of the Houston franchise. These were all very viable independent teams prior to becoming part of the affiliated network. So that concludes my presentation concerning Miles Wolf and independent baseball. Okay, I have time for two questions or two comments. Question.
I wanted to ask if you knew that there's a history of women's baseball involved with Miles Wolf as well. So one of Miles's league teams that he didn't own, but Nick Lepardo owned, this, the North Shore Spirit that went from the Northeast League to the Can-Am League, started a semi-pro women's league that played their field and barnstormed with them, you know, went with the men's team essentially and played.
That's certainly part of Miles' legacy, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. So they really tried to make it work in New England in the Northeast League with Troy Women's League. I was not good enough to get in that league. That told you what the level of the play was in that league. So.
Thank you for doing that. Question.
So there's also three more teams in the Chicago area in the Frontier League, so we have about six here, which is awesome.
Yeah, but quite a few for independent franchises within an hour of here.
Including my hometown in Joliet, and I've seen how much it's revitalized downtown, and I really thank Miles Wolf for that. My question is this, so when the Northern League first started, it was a lot of in the north central part of the country, not big cities, not big markets, but as we see how it's grown, so now we have a lot of independent league teams in bigger markets. Is that is the business model something that he strived for, or was he more for the cities that didn't have affiliate ball?
Okay, back in the 1990s, he was getting these inquiries from mid-sized cities.
Right.
That didn't have franchises, and they saw some of the success that the minor leagues were having in these mid-sized cities. And again, as I think I mentioned, they had recently had concern about St. Paul being too close to Minneapolis, and Minneapolis having a major league franchise. But since then, Milwaukee has an independent league team, and Sugar Land is very close to Houston. So I think the business model has changed a bit. They realize now when you have a major league team, the cost of families going to those major league teams is quite high. And of course some of the minor leagues have approached close to those franchises, but there's still an opportunity for, like Staten Island in New York. Now, I think Brooklyn is associated with the Mets. I'm still back with the Dodgers in New York. The Mets, but Staten Island is an independent franchise, and then Atlantic League with York. In fact, I saw Staten Island play last year.
Thank you.
Thank you very much once again. And don't forget the book. I told Miles I'd talk about his book.